My first guest tonight is Dr. Marcia Emery, a pioneer in the field of applied intuition, a psychologist, consultant, college lecturer, and author. Her clients have included such corporate giants as AT&T, Amway Corporation, Blue Care Network, and Hewlett-Packard, as well as nonprofits, including the Junior League of New York, Metropolitan Hospital of Grand Rapids, Michigan, Wainwright House in Rye, New York, and Unity Church. She is the author of Dr. Marcia Emery's Intuition Workbook, An Expert's Guide to Unlocking the Wisdom of Subconscious Minds, published by Prentice Hall in 1994, which was deemed a classic in the field and selected by 3 book clubs for its members. The Intuitive Healer, Accessing Your Inner Physician, by St. Martin's Press in 1999, and her third book, Power Hunch, by Beyond Works in 2001. She has audio tapes available and has been interviewed by USA Today, Health Magazine, Woman's World, Cosmopolitan, Newsweek, and United Airlines, Hemisphere Magazine, and seen on CBS, NBC, and PBS, joining such luminaries as Jane Seymour, Jeffrey Mishlove, Gary Zukav, and George Shakti Hill. Tonight she will talk about intuitive dreams. Additional information about Dr. Emery can be found on her website, www.drmarciaemery.com. That is drmarciaemery.com. I welcome you, Marcia, to the Holistic Health Show.
I'm delighted to be here.
Thank you. First, Marcia, tell me how you got interested in dream work.
Well, it goes back to May 1970. And I woke up one morning by a dream that just terrified me at that moment.
Mm.
And in this dream, I put my foot on the brake and it went right to the floor.
Oh.
The car turned around 3 times and I got out unharmed. And it was one of those experiences where I woke up
mm-hmm.
and I didn't know if I was in the middle of an accident
mm-hmm.
because my heart was beating so rapidly, or when I finally got, you know, kind of clearer, I looked around and saw that I was in my bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I had just started to keep a dream journal, and that's another story how I
mm-hmm.
got into that. But I was keeping a dream journal, so I dutifully wrote the dream down. And as I will relate this later, a few weeks later, I actually was in an accident. I'm on my way to a dance rehearsal. I was a dancer and had my dance troupe, and I put my foot on the brake. One of my dancers is sitting in the death seat,
mm-hmm.
and my foot went right to the floor. He said, pull up the emergency. I said, that doesn't work either. And I had a split second to decide
mm-hmm.
whether I was going to crash into all the cars in front of me or on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
And I managed to steer the car between 2 buildings. And just the car was like an accordion.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, Mike, without a seatbelt, did a death seat. He got out fine. I had a scratch. And I was so alarmed.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went back and I realized this is what I dreamt about,
oh.
putting my foot on the brake and the car turning over,
mm-hmm.
though symbolically. So the bottom line, just to answer the question
mm-hmm.
briefly, in the weeks that followed, I was having one dream after another
mm-hmm.
that came true. And I was absolutely alarmed by this. I thought I was losing my mind.
Right.
Because even though I have a lot of letters after my name, no one
mm-hmm.
In psychology, I never saw anything
mm-hmm.
like this. So I had started to keep a dream book.
Mm-hmm.
And it was amazing to me about these dreams that were coming true. So that's what got me
mm-hmm.
started.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did anything happen that triggered this? You know, usually you think of having some illness or some catastrophic accident or something that
Nothing.
Triggers this. No?
Nothing that I know. because I describe myself mm-hmm. as a very straight academic professor mm-hmm. at that time.
Right.
And what I mean by straight, I wasn't into anything with higher consciousness, mm-hmm. anything with psi, with parapsychology. I had no vocabulary for any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I was just a psychology professor teaching mm-hmm. in a university undergraduate and graduate courses.
Well, I guess God was ready for you to move on to a different level, wasn't he, or she?
Yes. Well, you know, something did happen. Something did happen. It happened right before I was about to be spiritually baptized into mm-hmm. Unity Church.
Oh.
And this wasn't a baptism with water or uh-huh. anything of that mm-hmm. sort, but it was just a symbolic.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a part of it, opening up to the higher mind.
Right.
And as I said, I had just started keeping a dream book,
mm-hmm.
a dream journal.
Well, I always think of dreams as the way God speaks with us. So I think you're going to talk a lot more about how God helps you to avoid some of the things that come up in the future.
Well, absolutely.
By giving you clues as to what's coming up. Now, I don't have that ability, I don't think, but maybe you're going to tell us. We all do, so let's get on with the question.
Right.
What is intuitive dream work then, Marcia?
Okay, now you mentioned God, so I have to kind of pause for a moment
mm-hmm.
here and talk about first intuition.
Mm-hmm.
For me, intuition is the deepest wisdom of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
Or another way I always say is intuition is the voice of God.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's a clear knowing.
Mm-hmm.
So we're on the same page
right.
with that. So here, dreams come along. So many dreams come. So I'm just going to give some dream scenarios of people
mm-hmm.
I've worked with.
Mm-hmm.
Peter is chased by a can of tomato paste. Shannon discovers she's a headless fish. Mary's teeth are falling out. Anna dreams of tons of great white sharks
mm-hmm.
chasing and eating people on the beach. Melanie's brakes fail when she's in the middle of traffic. So my question is, why does the dreaming mind dish up these scary images?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that last dream of the brakes failing was mine. I just called myself Melanie there.
Mm-hmm.
So when I talk about intuitive dream work,
mm-hmm.
it's the power of using intuition for dream analysis.
Mm-hmm.
So there are two parts to this.
Mm-hmm.
One is previewing upcoming events. For example, had I known then, back in 1970, what I know now, when that dream came to me where I put my foot on the brake, that was a warning.
Mm-hmm.
It was a preparation. And I could have had my brakes checked.
Mm-hmm.
I could have heeded that as a warning. So one part of intuitive dream work is previewing upcoming events.
Mm-hmm.
The other part is retrieving rapid insights.
Mm-hmm.
And for that, I have a method that we'll talk about,
mm-hmm.
my intuitive dream shift, for going in and going into the bottom line real, real quickly.
Mm-hmm. So your dreams then, intuitive dreams then, do alert you to upcoming events. And so what do you call these dreams that come true?
Well, these are called precognitive.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I also use the word intuitive, but an intuitive dream in many ways is encompasses a much broader spectrum of human ability.
Mm-hmm.
For example, the creative inspiration of scientists and artists. That has nothing to do with psychic ability, predicting.
Mm-hmm.
Einstein was a mental intuitive. And when he thought in many of these images before formulating his theories, which was an abstract kind of intuition,
mm-hmm.
An intuitive dream. So you could have a very broad intuitive dream,
mm-hmm.
or the precognitive is a predictive dream. And it's, as I said, it's a warning. It's a preparatory
mm-hmm.
type dream.
Mm-hmm. Does everyone have these dreams?
Well, you know, I want to say yes.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, people would kind of look at me and cock their eye and say, are you kidding? I don't even remember my dreams.
Right, right.
Let alone dreams that come true.
Well, Marcy, I have people tell me they don't dream, and I said everyone dreams. If
everyone
you go to
dreams.
The sleep lab, and they will watch your eye movement, and they'll tell you you dreamed, whether you remember it or not. You dream.
Yes, yes. everybody does dream. And, you know, for me, what was so fascinating, I lived in Grand Rapids, Michigan,
mm-hmm.
13, 14 years ago. And it was a time where I didn't go around talking about psychic, intuitive, psi, parapsychology. And, no, and when I did, it always aroused a lot of suspicion.
Mm-hmm.
So one day I was going on the radio to talk about dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, you know, I got it to myself. I said, I got to do it. This is what I believe in. I've got to talk about these precognitive dreams.
Right.
And I started talking about them. And it was absolutely amazing how the switchboard lit up.
Oh.
Lit up completely.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say everyone has the potential to
right.
have them.
Right, right. That's great to hear. Can you describe or give us some examples? I think maybe you have given some, but some examples that might differentiate them between an intuitive or precognitive dream.
Okay. Let me right now stay with the precognitive, the,
mm-hmm.
the predictive
okay. mm-hmm.
right now.
Mm-hmm.
I already mentioned about the accident.
Mm-hmm.
So it's 3 weeks later. This is back to 1970. And I have a brand new Chevy Nova.
Mm-hmm.
Brand new car, brand new ball game. And I have the following dream. In this dream, I'm on my way to a meeting. And I'm driving down 16th Street Northwest in Washington, D.C. I put my foot on the brake and it goes right to the floor. I hear a ping. I guide my car over to the curb, see a no parking sign,
mm-hmm.
and then I notice a policeman coming toward me. I say to the policeman, "Can you watch my car? My brakes aren't working." He said, "Certainly." Well, I woke up, and I don't have to tell you how baffled I was.
Right.
Why am I having another brake dream? And why when I have a brand new car? So, this time, it was like 3 days later, and I am on my way, and I'm driving down 16th Street Northwest,
mm-hmm.
on my way to an 11 o'clock meeting. And when I put my foot on the brake, and it went right to the floor, and I heard that ting, and looked up and saw the no parking and the policeman, I just relaxed. I said, been there, done that. And I guided the car over, and it was just as it happened in the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what happened? My brake cable snapped.
Oh.
In a brand new
car. That's what the
thing was? Yeah, that was the thing.
Oh.
So in the days and weeks that followed, I mean, I'm dreaming about missing airplanes, and I don't check this out, and I not only missed airplanes, they changed the schedule. I dream about my red pocketbook stolen. So I take my little red pocketbook. Well, red is red.
Mm-hmm.
That was stolen. I'm talking to people, and I'm saying, why are we going over this? We already talked about
mm-hmm.
this. And they say, no, we haven't. I said, yes, we have. You're going to say, and blah, blah, and I'm going to say. And one after the other, things were coming true. I mean, people would say, well, I didn't say that, but I was going to say that.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just mind-boggling to me because I still didn't know what was happening
mm-hmm.
to me. Well, years go by. I finally found a label, a name, precognitive, continued to have these dreams. And one dream that was very momentous, Victor Beasley was a friend of mine and a colleague in the field of intuition.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a dream that Victor and I were going to a business meeting, and he gave me his jacket to pack and some ties. And I said, Victor, these are yours. Why are you giving them to me? He said, no, I want you to have them. End of dream. Well, I dutifully wrote that down,
mm-hmm.
was ever so puzzled about this, and days later, I found out that my beloved friend died suddenly on the operating table.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's look at that dream. The jacket.
Mm-hmm.
The jacket to shield me from the chill when I heard this news
mm-hmm.
and to bring me comfort. And the ties, to keep the ties between us.
Mm-hmm.
So, often, and I had the same experience with my mother's passing in a series of dreams. So it's fascinating if we're on top of it,
mm-hmm. change the outcome as a result of dreams, or do they always occur anyhow?
Well, like in my initial dreams,
mm-hmm.
I could have checked my brakes.
Mm-hmm.
I had that information.
Mm-hmm.
Even with the pain, I could have taken it in
mm-hmm.
and had the system checked.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't. So that was an
mm-hmm.
example.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of someone passing, you know, I can't play God there.
Right, right, right.
But, you know, we get health warnings. I dreamt that a tall female physician told me I had cancer.
Mm-hmm.
And I got very upset. And I said, no, I don't. You're a quack. You're a phony. And I was all upset.
Mm-hmm.
And when I woke up in this dream, I, you know, touched my breast. That was it breast cancer? What is going on? And I forgot about it.
Mm-hmm.
And weeks later, and when I'm giving this dream to address your question.
Mm-hmm.
Weeks later, I went to a skin doctor, a doctor I had never visited before.
Mm-hmm.
I had a tiny little red dot at the end of my nose. So the doctor invites me in, and I'm lying down. And suddenly I feel this surge going through me of pain. And without asking me,
mm-hmm.
he took a biopsy from my nose.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it was so invasive, so invasive.
Oh.
And he said, well, I'll call, you know, with the results in a week. And he calls me, and he said, you know, you don't have cancer. The biopsy is fine, but I think you need to have this operation anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So I said, well, how much is it? He said, $900. And at that moment, Carl,
mm-hmm.
that dream came right back to me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're a quack. You're a phony.
Mm-hmm.
And when I said I had a tall female
mm-hmm.
physician, this was a short male.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes we do dream reversal.
Oh.
So here's the dream reversal of the short male
mm-hmm.
telling me that I didn't have cancer, but I needed an operation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I remembered that dream. And because of that dream, see, I changed the outcome of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, no, I will not have that operation.
Yeah.
I did have it double checked as well.
Oh. Well, I had one that was also pretty obvious that it was a health dream. I had stopped eating any meat or dairy and all, going strictly vegetarian. And I had a dream I was in the hen house and the chickens were all flying at me. And I thought, well, that means I should start eating some chicken.
Because
they were almost trying to get in my mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So I interpreted it that I needed to, you know, move away at that point from strictly vegetarian and start eating some meat. Can you describe for us then the intuitive dream shift method for interpreting dreams?
Yes. And with the dream shift, I'm trying to get people to go from the logical mind to the intuitive mind. Some
mm-hmm.
call that the right brain, the
mm-hmm.
right mind. I don't think it's just up in our mind. But I'm trying to go from this logical mode to the intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
So after we have our dream, we write it down. We give the dream a title in 8 words or less. Then the second step is to become centered and receptive. Centering could be saying an affirmation, could be looking at a mandala.
Mm-hmm.
Saying a mantra, listening to some pleasing, relaxing music. Then the receptivity would be breathing and relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
The third step is to go on and identify the major symbol.
Mm-hmm.
I never take more than 3 symbols. I usually just take 1. The fourth step is to interpret, and I go in with a process called amplification, where you keep coming back and associating to the central symbol.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I use a process called word association, a trail of associations. Then my fifth step is to engage the symbol artistically. Something creative, you know, you could sing a song about it, you could draw something, write a verse, dance, move. And as you're doing this, you're again continuing to get into that right mode.
Mm-hmm.
And as you're doing these things, it becomes very obvious what the message of the dream is.
Mm-hmm.
So that you could go to the sixth step, which is implementing the dream discovery.
Mm-hmm. This is is all so interesting to me, Marcia. Can you give us an example of this technique?
Sure. Here's a dream. The family was gathered together for an event and was preparing to go somewhere. My mother was not feeling well, so we called a doctor. This doctor was female and explained that my mother had a blood clot in her uterus and couldn't be moved. We all knew we had to stay, but were getting ready to leave. We left her in the lower level of the house so that if someone came in while we were gone, they couldn't hurt her. She was on a bed in the lower level where she had been examined. My father discounted her unwellness. My sister and her family were there for the holiday meal, as well as some family friends, Jack and Dorothy. Well, I'm just telling you the dream, but it helps sometime when you hear a dream to understand the context of the dream.
Right.
And my student had this dream right before Thanksgiving, and they were faced with the proverbial dilemma, his family or her family, and they had decided to go visit her husband's family. So she had this dream. So we go through, we give the dream a title, and the title here is We Gather Together. The next step is centering the receptivity. Donna took four total breaths, and she used a progressive relaxation technique to relax from her toes to her head. Then we're up to third. Identify the major symbols. So there was one main symbol that came through to me, and it was the blood clot. So the next step of interpretation of the blood clot, we begin to associate, just let any association come. And when I did this with Donna, we came up with doctor, a blood clot means tumor, blood clot sickness, a blood clot heart, a blood clot sudden death. Well, she stopped there with sudden death. But of course that upset her. And she wanted another check on what that sudden death, another insight. So she took the word uterus, because the blood clot was in the uterus. And word association, the technique, is a train of association. So from uterus, she said, well, that reminds me of children. Children reminds me of love. And she stopped there. And she realized because of her love for her mother, though her mother wasn't ill now, something may have happened, and it was important for them to change their plans. And go to her family instead of his. So that's how that worked.
Marcia, how do you invite a dream to visit you?
Well, there are many ways I do this. I go during the day, and I tell myself throughout the day, tonight I will remember my dream. Tonight I will remember my dream. And before I go to sleep, I write down three or four sentences that describes the day. Now, that's a very simple procedure. By my bed, I have a book, a notebook, and a pen ready to transcribe. I have a book close by. That's my dream book. And I could always write something down. But what I've been talking about so far is for a unprogrammed dream. That means a dream to come passively. Sometime, though, you might have a question that you want your dream to answer. And in that case, you want to program your dream. So let's say you're looking for a new job. So several times during the day, instead of just saying, tonight I will remember my dream, tonight I will remember my dream showing me something about my new job. So you brought that in. And then before you go to sleep, you might write down what we call a programming or a conditioning phrase or question. It's like, you know, you're asking your dreaming mind, and I could write in my book, show me anything about my new job situation coming up. So in that case, I would have written that down, and all I have to do is go to sleep And, you know, I might wake up in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. I might wake up toward morning. Whenever I do wake up, to write down
mm-hmm.
what I receive in that notebook.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, there's, you know, another thing I could add with the dream environment.
Mm-hmm.
I have a cat that I love dearly, but she comes and meows and chases away my dreams. Sometimes, you know, an alarm clock will do that.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you're sleeping with someone who's a very restless sleeper.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes children come into your room. So if you're really trying to capture that dream, you have to make sure that all these outside disturbances are minimal.
Mm-hmm. I've heard in the past that once you step on the floor, the dream goes. And it used to be that way with me. I would have to write some notes before I got out of bed, and then I'd remember the whole dream in the morning. But recently, I've found that I might remember dreams all day before I write them down.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any reason why this is happening now?
Well, you're setting your intention. They're more important to you now.
Oh.
That's one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think also, you know, dreams, I don't think a dream is ever nonsensical.
Mm-hmm.
Even though sometimes it can preview what happened mm-hmm. the day before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think something, you know, when you do remember, something might be trying to get your attention.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I would pay attention to that.
Oh, mm-hmm. Before we look at a couple dreams that I have that I'd like to ask you about, is there anything else you'd like to talk about, Marcia, about dreams and intuitive dream work?
Well, I just want to encourage people to try it. People could always go to my website for examples of this. They could always find this in my books. And I know we'll say something about mm-hmm. the books and the website later.
Mm-hmm.
So I want to encourage people to do it. And sometimes, here's another thing, if you get a dream partner to work with,
mm-hmm.
it makes dream work more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I have a dream group. They meet once a month. 5 to 7 people come together,
mm-hmm.
and we help each other with the dream. I will also, before we end, mention the International Association for the Study of Dreams
mm-hmm.
as an organization
mm-hmm.
and how people could get involved with that.
That would be great. I'm in a Search for God group, which is the Edgar Cayce groups,
mm-hmm.
and we discuss dreams and help each other interpret. And some people are better than others, but we all try to help each other, and you do see some commonalities in dreams.
You said the magic word, Edgar Cayce.
Right.
A quote I could give from Cayce about precognitive dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Cayce said, "Nothing of significance in our lives happens unless we first preview it in a dream."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, Marcia, I'd like to ask you about a couple of dreams. One of them is mine, and I talked about this in my study group, and they had some ideas, but it was a dream that I remembered 2 or 3 days before I wrote it down, and so I felt like it was an important dream. And also, it was a dream that involved my mother. And my mother's now deceased, but we were very close when she was alive. So I'm interested to see what you see in my dream. So my dream, I was at St. Lawrence University in Canton, New York, looking at catalogs and filling out forms and planning to return to school. Now, I must say I'm age 76. So these were almost like a series of 3 dreams all in one. So that was the first dream. Then the second one, I was at my mother's house, and my mother is now deceased, but she lived about 25 miles from St. Lawrence University when she was alive. I walked into her house, and she was washing dishes at the sink, and I walked over and put my arms around her, and I didn't want to let go. I was so overwhelmed by seeing her that it was all I could do to avoid crying. Someone asked me what I was going to do, and I said I was going to school at St. Lawrence University because I needed to spend more time with my mother. Then it was evening at my mother's house, and I was going to bed, and I decided to wash the dishes in the sink first. And I don't know how many other dishes were in the sink, but I noticed that there were 3 cups and saucers. As I was washing the dishes, I noticed a group of college students dancing and talking in another room that I had not seen or heard previously. I thought to myself, well, it was a good thing I didn't go upstairs to bed, because it was too noisy to sleep. So that was my dream.
Okay, so if you had to give this dream a title, how would you title it?
I would say, Visiting My Mother.
Okay. And in my process, we would get relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
Just assume we're doing that. I'm feeling already kind of winding
mm-hmm.
down.
Mm-hmm.
And identify the major symbols. Now, there are a lot of symbols here.
Mm-hmm.
I could let you mention 2 symbols, and then I'll tell you what jumped out at me.
Well, one was 3, because it was like 3 dreams, and there was 3 cups and saucers. And was there anything else that was 3? 3 seemed to be something, and then the other thing that seemed to be a symbol was my mother and I working together, because she was washing dishes and then I was washing dishes. But then studying got in there somehow, but I was the one that was studying. My mother wasn't. Is this what you mean by symbols?
Yeah, okay. So when we do dream work,
mm-hmm.
and if we were in a session, I would take you, or in a group, I would take you through this, 10-15 minutes, but because
mm-hmm.
we're doing this
mm-hmm.
quickly now,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say, if this were my dream,
mm-hmm.
assuming this were my dream,
right?
Okay. If this were my dream, the symbol that comes forward is washing the dishes.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes up twice.
Mm-hmm.
It repeats itself. So I go right to that symbol, and I want to get in there with an amplification. That means I want to keep associating
mm-hmm.
to it. So if washing the dishes, that soap, dishes, a container, anything
mm-hmm.
else with washing?
Well, it's a daily activity. It's work. It's something
it's
that's
work.
Required. I mean, I don't mean work in the negative sense. I mean, it's something that you do every day.
Okay.
Because I don't dislike doing dishes.
Just in a word or two, we're trying to associate.
Oh.
Yeah. So I put down work.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you see, I get another phrase, cleaning up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I say to myself, again, if this were my dream, what old issue am I needing to clean up?
Mm-hmm.
Old because I'm going back to my mother who's not here.
Mm-hmm.
Old because I'm going back to St. Lawrence University.
Mm-hmm.
Something I did a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm saying, is there an old issue I'm trying to clean up? And then I'm going to also glom onto that number 3.
Mm-hmm.
3 cups and saucers.
Mm-hmm.
3 is a social number. And I'm going to say, is this an old issue that I need to be more social and reach out to other people? Bingo.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm done.
Oh. Yeah, that's very, very likely, because
yeah.
I tend to live a monastic life.
Okay.
And I tend to be quite happy in that lifestyle.
But you see how I went right in there without
right.
even knowing you or
right.
knowing anything about you?
Right, right.
Yeah, that's to me the intuitive
mm-hmm.
dream work,
mm-hmm.
is to go right in there,
mm-hmm.
right in there. And I could have taken a whole bunch of other symbols and said a whole
mm-hmm.
lot of things right in there.
Right. Now, the other dream was by Jan, who lives in Newport News, Virginia. And in her dream, she says, I was in the kitchen with some people eating 2 pieces of cold cuts that I had rolled up. One of the men in the kitchen told me they had murdered someone, chopping them up, and I was eating whoever they murdered. I was wearing an Easter green Chanel-looking suit with white piping, not something that I would choose. I looked at the cold cuts, and I asked myself, am I sick? No. Does this taste funny? No. So I continued eating it. I walked into another room and saw a dead woman on the floor. She was surrounded by boxes of shoes and clothing from the closet. She was blonde and wearing an Easter green suit with white piping. I ignored her and had no interest in her as I kept looking for something else. It took a while before I realized that the woman was me.
Okay, now, of course, I don't have Jan here.
Right.
But I would just go through if this were my dream.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And I would give it a title, Dead Woman on the Floor, and I would then relax and be receptive. And the symbol that jumps out at me
mm-hmm.
is the dead woman
mm-hmm.
on the floor. So I could go start to amplify to that, to keep associating.
Mm-hmm.
Lifeless, so something's gone, end of an era,
mm-hmm.
an ending. And suddenly that ending resonates to me
mm-hmm.
that something is dying off, something is coming to an end,
mm-hmm.
and it's time to shift and go in another direction.
Mm-hmm.
And to support that, I'm attracted to the word Easter.
Mm-hmm.
Easter is a time of resurrection,
mm-hmm.
going in a new direction. So I would ask Jan to look at what is changing in her life
mm-hmm.
and where does she need to go
mm-hmm.
into a new direction.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a cold cut. You know, you take your hand, you do a cut.
Right.
A karate
right.
chop.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's over and time to go on
mm-hmm.
into a new area.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, I appreciate that. Now, Marcia, do you have services and products to offer our listeners that you could
Well, I certainly do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm the author of 3 books, Dr. Marcia Emery's Intuition Workbook, The Intuitive Healer, and Power Hunch. And I have a chapter on dreams in every one of the books.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, every one of the books is filled with the how-to ways of developing one's intuition. So to find out about my books, to find out about my services, because I do dream work with people, I do intuitive counseling and consulting, and
mm-hmm.
I do this by phone. To find out, my website is www. Now the rest is all one word.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. D-R goes right into my name, Marcia, M-A-R-C-I-A, EMERY.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out about, you know, more about my consulting services, my dream work, my counseling, and of course the books there.
Mm-hmm.
Now I want to mention one other website, because it's the website of the International Association for the Study of Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a wonderful organization. And they have discussion groups, they have an annual conference, they have regional conferences, and that's www.asdreams.org, all in one word.
Mm-hmm.
A, capital S, capital D, and you continue with the word dreams.org.
Mm-hmm. Well, I commend you, Marcia, for getting a doctorate and all, because when I looked on the internet, there are a lot of people that are doing intuitive dream work, but there are not many people that have credentials.
Well, thank you for saying that. And I might add, when my first book came out, Dr. Marcia Emery's Intuition Workbook,
mm-hmm.
And that was published by a major publisher at the time,
mm-hmm.
Prentice Hall.
Mm-hmm.
It was only the second book that came out, and that was in 1994, not that really
right,
that
right,
long ago.
Right.
And the first one before me was just not my book, but
mm-hmm.
someone's book, a little pamphlet by somebody. And when this book came out, it did offer a lot of credentialing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And even in my book, The Intuitive Healer, you know, empowering people to use their own healing.
Right.
I have people like Dr. Gladys McGarry
mm-hmm.
in there.
Oh, yeah, right. Mm-hmm.
And she used to be connected with ARE.
Right, right.
And other professionals
mm-hmm.
talking about how they, too, have used intuitive work.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you.
I think that's very important, Marcia. Maybe not from the public point of view, but from my point of view, it's very important to have people that are credible and that have some background in what they're presenting. I spoke with a girl one day who told me that she was an energy healer. And I said, what is that? And she said, well, I work with energy. And I said, well, explain it to me. And she said, well, I work with energy. I said, well, what credentials do you have? What do you mean? I said, did you go to school? No. I said, are you certified? She said, no. Well, it makes me uncomfortable that people are out in the community dealing with the public that have no background to be doing this.
Well, I also might add that I teach for 4 graduate universities.
Mm-hmm.
2 of them programs in energy medicine,
mm-hmm.
in medical intuition,
mm-hmm.
in consciousness studies.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is my excitement to see more programs coming out to the public like this.
Right, right, right. Well, this has been very informative, Marcia, and I really appreciate your taking the time to be with us today.
Thank you for inviting me, Carl. It's always a joy to bring a little touch of enlightenment
I appreciate
to others.
Thank you. My second guest tonight is Padma, who spoke with us a few weeks ago about meditation. Tonight, she will talk about yoga. Padma is one of Canada's best-known teachers of meditation and yoga, and writes and hosts a daily national TV series called Living Yoga with Padma. She has also produced 2 instructional DVDs. Padma studied in the Himalayas of India and has been authorized to teach meditation and yoga by the director of the International Meditation Institute of India. Padma was director of the Padma Yoga and Meditation Center in Vancouver, BC, and currently leads courses and workshops. She will soon bring her classes and workshops to the United States. She holds a Bachelor's of Science in Biology from McGill University. Additional information is available on her website, www.padmameditation.com. That is PADMAMEDITATION.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Padma, and I'm happy to have you here.
Well, thank you very much, Carl.
I'm wanting to take advantage of your expertise about yoga and meditation and ask questions that I think will be of interest to our listeners. Some people think yoga is a physical activity, but I believe it is more holistic. How do you conceptualize yoga?
Oh, it's a good question, Carl. I actually do agree with you that yoga is a holistic program. There are so many different practices under
mm-hmm.
the umbrella name of yoga.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly practices which are very physical. And even in the physical practices, there are many different types of physical practice.
Mm-hmm.
So you have more athletic and aerobic and hard-working styles of yoga, and you've also got gentler, more restorative and slower styles of the physical yoga.
Mm-hmm.
So even besides that, though, there are completely other practices of yoga, such as a whole range of different breathwork exercises.
Mm-hmm.
Work on the kind of subtle energies of breath and life force energy. And then also within yoga, there's a whole range of meditation practices,
mm-hmm.
which have to do with more the mind field and bringing balance and strength into the mind. As well, there's lots of yoga philosophy, and there's a yoga
mm-hmm.
diet. There's yoga ethics and lifestyle. There's yoga astrology. There's all kinds
mm-hmm.
of different branches
mm-hmm.
of yoga all under this big umbrella
mm-hmm.
called yoga.
That's interesting. I practiced yoga when I was younger, and at that time I was able to do the shoulder stand.
Oh, good.
I never progressed to the headstand, but I would hesitate to do any of that now because of my age. Can yoga be done by people of all ages?
It really is a matter of what your personal physical conditioning and strength is at any given time in
mm-hmm.
life. I don't really see it as dependent on age at all.
Mm-hmm.
It simply is how strong is your body at this moment and what poses are you able to do safely.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, maybe a 20-year-old is not ready to do a headstand. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Not relative to age.
Oh.
And in the same moment, my teacher in India was 80 years old and he could pop up and do a headstand at any moment. And he would. So it's really a matter of practice and building your strength and capacity and doing what's appropriate for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think maybe you've answered what I was going to ask next, and that is, are there specific postures for different ages?
Yeah, well, in general, I find that younger people like to do more flowing and energetic styles because
mm-hmm.
they've got that extra energy to burn off.
Mm-hmm.
And they like the feeling of exercising rigorously.
Mm-hmm.
I find at my age, and my students are even older than me, we tend to like things a little bit more steady,
mm-hmm.
More of the poses on the floor, maybe supported on the back, against the wall, things which are not as fast-moving
mm-hmm.
and rigorous.
Mm-hmm.
I find that there's not so much need for that.
Would you suggest specific postures for people over age 65?
Well, like I said before, it's a matter of your personal conditioning and your capacity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you've been doing yoga for many, many years, then you can be doing like backbends and headstands right into your 80s,
mm-hmm.
as I said, right? It's
mm-hmm.
possible. And it's something for people to know that if I keep up this yoga constantly every day or, you know, as much as possible, I'll be able to bring this, you know, many of the poses into my, you know, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, I would say in general that you need to be very attentive and aware of your body's capacity. For example, if you know that you've got a hip trouble or knee trouble or neck trouble,
mm-hmm.
you really have to be respectful to your own body.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever are into a pose that hurts you particularly, you just gently back out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And and best to have a teacher kind of guiding you as to, you know, is this a good idea for your body in particular? I mean, for me, I love a lot of work on the back, as
mm-hmm.
I said, a lot of the pulling the knees into the chest while you're lying on your back, drawing one knee in at a time and then changing the other knee in. This
mm-hmm.
is really great for the back, the hips, the knees. Another nice pose is to roll over into a child pose and just stretch your low back down, your hips down to your heels into child. This is really good for the low back. I also encourage my older students on hands and knees. You know, if the knees are padded nicely on a cushion,
mm-hmm.
they can do cat stretches, just flexing the back, up, arching, and then flexing, kind of keeping that spine flexible and moving, keeping the shoulders and hips agile and mobile.
Mm-hmm.
I find that's really important. And also standing poses, just side stretches, half moon stretches to the sides. I also encourage them to put their hands on a table and kind of go into a table pose, like
mm-hmm.
a 90-degree angle with the back flat. This is really great for stretching out those shoulders and the hips and the back. And then we do some gentle lunges, taking one step forward and just stretching out the back of the hamstrings for the legs. Often, people have spent a lifetime working at a desk or something, and their legs are pretty stiff and tight. So lots of hamstring stretches with gentle lunges or something. But hanging onto a table or chair is always
mm-hmm.
A good idea.
Mm-hmm.
I also find balancing poses useful. So often I'll have my students stand in a doorway and hang on to the door frame, and then just practice drawing one knee up and practice finding their balance standing on one leg. I find particularly some people start to feel they're losing their balance a little bit more as time goes on.
Mm-hmm.
So practicing standing on one leg is really good for core stability and the whole just muscular conditioning of maintaining balance. All those little mini muscles all through the body which constantly are working to maintain our balance.
Mm-hmm.
We can exercise those.
Mm-hmm. Do people usually warm up before they do yoga, or is it something they can just move into?
Well, if you're moving into a gentle practice, mm-hmm. then you just start gentle and you stay gentle the whole practice. It's nice. You're very aware at the beginning of warming up the hips, maybe a gentle forward fold, warming up the shoulders, some shoulder rolls, warming up the neck, just gently side to side, and being mostly aware of your body, what's going on with your joints, the hips, the shoulders, and making sure that you do a little bit of gentle movement in each area, basically to bring your attention to your own body,
mm-hmm.
so that you can be aware of whether there's a trouble in the hip or a trouble in the shoulder today, and there's just more awareness of what you're working with.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
Kind of a tuning in before you go forward into any more rigorous poses.
Mm-hmm.
Tune in first.
Mm-hmm. What are the benefits of yoga for people of all ages?
Oh, the benefits are just so many. I could list a huge long list. I mean, physically, the yoga exercises are designed to stimulate your life force, so you feel more vibrant. They stimulate your immune system, so you don't get as many colds. I haven't had a cold for years.
Oh, you haven't?
No, it's like everyone around me is always sick and coughing, and I just
mm-hmm.
don't get sick.
Oh, that's great.
It is great, and I'm sure it's because I just keep my body through
mm-hmm.
all these yoga poses, just keep it healthy and vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
I find that it helps your digestive system. A lot of the poses are designed for assisting your digestion, which is key to all other aspects of your health.
Mm-hmm.
Many of the poses are designed for the spine and keeping that back flexible, which is excellent for your nervous system. All of your nerves kind of come back to the spinal column. So the yogis say a healthy spine is a healthy person.
Mm-hmm.
So your stomach, your spine, your muscular system, which helps support your skeleton. Also your respiratory system with the breathing exercises and the integration of breath and body. It really expands and keeps your lungs strong, keeps
mm-hmm.
your blood well oxygenated, and when your blood is oxygenated, your brain is healthier and happier.
Right.
There's a lot of poses which are called inversions, so your head is down, and that's really good also for your brain, just getting blood to your brain, blood to your heart. Many of the poses with feet up in the air are also very good for relieving like varicose veins or other troubles with the legs. And also just the whole back, having the back supported on the floor, on the wall. These are great poses for a lot of emotional situations as well.
Mm-hmm.
Often the back indicates to us that there's some kind of emotional stress going on. So when we do poses with the back well supported on the floor or on the wall, it tends to steady and balance and strengthen our emotions as well.
Mm-hmm. Can people learn yoga by themselves, or should they have an instructor?
Well, there are so many good books out there and DVDs. I mean, I've produced DVDs myself for people
mm-hmm.
To use on their own. But I learned myself with a teacher, and I've always continued to find great inspiration from new teachers. And so I would highly recommend that you learn from someone who has already learned a lot,
mm-hmm, right.
and allow them to pass on their wisdom to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a great fast track to learning, and so to learn as much as you can from others, but then also to have a home practice and do a little bit on your own at home is also fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Now, where would people find instructors, and what should they look for in an instructor?
Well, you can find instructors at most of the yoga centers around town. I know most cities now have some yoga centers, and usually the teachers they hire should have been checked out and be qualified.
Mm-hmm.
There's also a matter of what personality clicks with you. One teacher might suit you better, just
mm-hmm.
by their personality, or maybe you find their education is what you want to learn. What you should look out for and avoid is any teacher which is harsh or aggressive or makes you feel bad in any way.
Mm-hmm.
It's completely contradictory to the main purpose of yoga, which is to cultivate nonviolence and gentleness and compassion. So if a teacher is shouting or aggressive or harsh or in any way makes you feel bad, it doesn't support you,
mm-hmm.
then I would suggest looking for a different teacher.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'm interested in your DVDs. I noticed that you had DVDs on yoga. Can you tell us about them and where we can find them?
Yes, thank you. A couple of years ago, I produced two DVDs. One is called Mountain, and I really wanted to make a DVD which was a good, solid, foundational practice. That's why I called it Mountain Pose.
Mm-hmm.
It's a solid foundation. And it's a very accessible DVD. There's about 50 minutes of video of me doing yoga poses,
mm-hmm.
beautifully shot here in Vancouver. And so you can follow right along with those yoga poses, and it takes you through a very safe, solid, foundational daily practice.
Mm-hmm.
On that same DVD, I've also added a whole audio section. And in that audio section, I've included guided breath work, guided meditation, some guided yogic chanting, and even a little talk on yogic philosophy. So there's a whole
mm-hmm.
second section of other audio practices
mm-hmm.
of yoga, and that's the Mountain DVD. The second one is Ocean DVD, and this is a more working with the fluidity of the energy in us, the movement of breath, the movement of the life force energies. And again, there's about 45, 50 minutes of video yoga practice on that.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's another whole section of audio, breath work, meditation, chanting, and philosophy. And both of those DVDs are available on my personal website, which is padmameditation.com.
Do you want to spell that out?
Okay, sure. It's PADMAMEDITATION.com.
Great, thank you.